So as I said, Micah is organized into these three cycles. Chapters 1 and 2 are what we're looking at tonight. And I'm going to introduce Micah to look at each of these cycles. We're going to look at God's pronouncement of his judgment on his people and his following declarations of hope for his people. So the nice thing about the way this is laid out in Micah is there's judgment. When we start with that, and then after judgment, we have hope and God promising those things that would come. So we'll look at those, but I did want to start off with just an introduction. So who was Micah? Let's take a look at who Micah was. So verse 1 tells us pretty much all we're going to get about Micah. He's a resident of the town of Moresheth, and so I got a map here, and it's kind of small, so I'm going to zoom in a little bit here so we can see. So there's Moresheth right there. You can see Jerusalem is pointed out on this map as the star. So he's a little ways away from Jerusalem, but not much. And most of the cities on this are going to be pointed out later in our study because almost all of these cities here are mentioned in chapter 2. And Micah, even the city where Micah comes from, he is going to pronounce judgment on that city as well. So we'll see a little bit more of that as we move on. But he was a resident of the town of Moresheth. He prophesied during the reign of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. So I'm going to bring out my chart again of the timeline of the kings of Judah and Israel and where the prophets were. And I'm going to zoom in on Micah. So we see Micah was during Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. We also see that if you look at Micah across the timeline, he was contemporary with Isaiah, Obed, and Hosea. And you can see the kings that were there in Israel at the time. And Micah is going to live and prophesy through the end of the northern 10 tribes. And those northern 10 tribes, those Samaritans or Sumerians, they're never coming back. There is a remnant, of course, that does survive in that part of the country. But most of the northern 10 tribes that are hauled away just kind of coalesce with the Assyrians. And what does come back is not pure Jewish, which is why they're so looked down upon by the Jews that do come back from the Babylonian captivity, because they stayed married mostly to the Israelites that, from the southern two tribes, and they didn't combine and coalesce with the Babylonian kingdom. They stayed separate. And so when they come back, they're, as they would say, pure Jews. And so they look down on the Samaritans, who are, again, those who came back to their country after more than 100 years, because we're going to see the Assyrian captivity happens in about 722, as I remember, is when they're taken captivity. And the Judah doesn't go into captivity until like 590, so we're talking hundreds of years of time where these Jews that were in the northern 10 tribes were assimilated into Assyrian culture. And I mean, our country's been around for, we're coming up on 250 years, and they're going to spend at least that in Assyrian captivity. How much has our country changed in 250 years? You can imagine how their culture had been just dramatically changed, living in and with and marrying those Assyrians. So yeah, those northern 10 tribes are pretty much going to be done away with, and what comes back into that area is not the same as what it was before it left. But we see Micah is, again, sees Jotham, which is a good king, as you can see by the green there, and Hezekiah, which was a good king, and sandwiched in between there was Ahaz, which was an evil king in Judah. So Micah had reason to call out those living in Judea, because they were sinning. they were worshiping idols, and he's going to get into that. So we'll look at that as well. Micah was given a vision from the Lord of what was going to come upon Samaria and Judah and what was coming for all mankind in the future. And so if we read just verse 1 of Micah, it reads, "A message came to Micah from the Lord. He was from the town of Moresheth. The message came while Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah were kings of Judah. This is the vision Micah saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem, and here's what it said." All right, so let's get into it. So we're going to look at a vivid description of God coming in judgment. Does someone want to read chapter 1, verses 2 through 5?
"Hear, O peoples, Hear, O peoples, all of you, listen, O earth and all it contains, and let the Lord God be a witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, the Lord is coming forth from his place. He will come down and tread on the high places of the earth. The mountains will melt under him, and the valleys will be split like wax before the fire, like water poured down a steep place. All this is for the rebellion of Jacob and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is rebellion of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? What is the high place of Judah? Is it not Jerusalem?"
All right. So we see this vision of this weight of divine wrath. Verse 4 tells us that he's going to come down out of heaven, and the mountains will melt under him like wax near a fire, and the valleys will be broken apart by water rushing down a slope. It's just this idea that the Lord is this massive being. And as we understand it, the Lord is everywhere, and he is bringing his judgment against Samaria and against Judah for their sins, for what they have done. He says in verse 5, "The people of Israel have committed many sins. Who is to blame for the wrong things that Jacob has done? Is it not Samaria? Who is to blame for the high places where Judah's people worship other gods? Is it not Jerusalem?" He is bringing judgment on Samaria and Jerusalem. Let's read about the Lord's judgment against Samaria, Micah chapter 1, verses 6 through 9, if somebody wants to read that.
"For I will make Samaria a heap of ruins in the open country, planting places for a vineyard. I will pour her stones down into the valley. I will lay bare her foundations. All her idols will be smashed. All her earnings will be burned with fire. All her images I will make desolate, for she collects them from a harlot's earning, and to the earnings of a harlot they will return. Because of this I will lament and wail. I must go barefoot and naked. I must make a lament like the jackals, and mourning like ostriches. For her wound is incurable, for it has come to Judah. It has reached the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem."
All right. So I'm reading from the New International Reader's Version. Verse 6, it says, "I will turn Samaria into a pile of trash. It will become a place for planting vineyards. I will dump its stones down into the valley, and I will destroy it down to its very foundations." The Lord is bringing his judgment against Samaria, and it's going to be great. He says, "All of the statues of Samaria's gods will be broken into pieces. All of the gifts of its people that the people gave to the temple prostitutes will be burned with fire. I will destroy all of the statues of its gods, and the Assyrians will use the gifts that they get out of the temple to pay its own temple prostitutes." So we see that Samaria or Assyria is just going to utterly destroy Samaria. And again, Micah is telling this prophecy ahead of time, but he's going to live to see this happen. He's going to live to see those northern 10 tribes swept away by Assyria. There's going to be nothing left but a remnant, but that remnant is going to be a inkling of what used to be in those places. And Syria is going to completely and utterly destroy the worship places that were set up by the evil kings of the northern 10 tribes. They're just going to wipe that place down. He says, I'm going to destroy it down to its very foundations. So they're just going to wipe it clean. Verse 9, Micah tells us just how bad Samaria is. Its wounds can't be healed. It is so corrupt and so wicked that there is nothing that can be done. So the Lord is just going to scrape it off down to its foundations and start over. He says the Lord will also judge Judah, and enemies will march up to the very gate of my people. And we know that's what happened when the Assyrians invaded the land of Israel. They did not take Jerusalem, but they were at its gates. They were about to do it. But as was prophesied, they did not take Jerusalem. And then the Lord's judgment against Judah. Somebody want to read chapter 1, verses 10 through 16.
Tell it not in Gath, weep not at all. At Beth-la-Aphra, roll yourself in the dust. Go on your way, inhabitant of Shephar, in shameful nakedness. The inhabitants of, I'm sorry, I'm not doing these right, Zanan does not escape. The lamentation of Beth-Ezel, he will take from you its support. For the inhabitant of Meroth becomes weak, waiting for good, because a calamity has come down from the Lord. How far did you say?
Through 16.
Okay, I'm sorry. To the gate of Jerusalem. Harness the chariot to the team of horses, O inhabitant of Lachish. She was the beginning of sin to the daughter of Zion, because in you were found the rebellious acts of Israel. Therefore you will give parting gifts on behalf of Moresheth-Gath. The houses of Achzib will become a deception to the kings of Israel. Moreover, I will bring on you the one who takes possession, O inhabitant of Mereshah. The glory of Israel will enter Adullam. Make yourself bald and cut off your hair because of the children of your delight. Extend your baldness like the eagle, for they will go from you into exile.
All right. So in verses 10 through 16, he is very specific about what's going to happen. He says, don't tell the people of Gath about it. And I've got Gath circled here on the map. That's where that was just a short jaunt away from where he was, where he lived in Moresheth-Gath. He says, don't let them see you sob, you people in Beth Ophrah, roll it in dust. Beth Ophrah is not on this map. It's north of Jericho, but he's talking to, the people in Judah who were living on the border between, between Judah and, Israel. He says, you who live in the town of Shafir, leave in shame without your clothes. Those who live in Zanan won't come out to help you. The people in Beth Ezel will sob. They won't be able to help keep you safe. Those who live in Meroth, those people who live in Meroth will groan with pains as they wait for help. That's because the Lord will bring trouble on them. It will reach the very gate of Jerusalem. So we see all the cities that I have circled here. All eight cities are going to see the Assyrian armies come through. And many of these cities are just going to be wiped out. The Assyrians are going to take captives. They're going to kill people. They don't get to those people in Jerusalem, the walled city, but they get to the gates. He talks about the people in Lachish. We can read about the horses and the chariots that were in Lachish. These people who trust in their military power, the Assyrians are just going to overwhelm them. They are not going to be able to be any sort of defense against the Assyrian army as it comes through Judah. That's because they were trusting in their own military power. They weren't trusting in the Lord to protect them. He says in verse 14, people of Judah, you might as well say goodbye to Moresheth near Gath. That's where he came from. You might as well say goodbye to that city. The town of Akzib won't give you any help to the kings of Israel. That's another town that was right there close to his town of Moreshah. An enemy will attack you who lives in Moreshah. Israel's glorious leaders will have to run away and hide in the cave of Adullam. So that's another place there that's circled. And then the children you enjoy so much will be taken away as prisoners. So shave your heads and sob, make them as bare as the head of a vulture. He is warning them. He is prophesying about the utter destruction that's going to come upon Judah as well. Many of their people are going to be carried off into captivity. Many will be killed. They will try to defend themselves, thinking that their horses and chariots have any ability to defend themselves from that Assyrian army, but that's not going to happen. They're going to be wiped out. Now again, Judah does not get utterly destroyed the way the northern 10 tribes do. Many of these cities will be rebuilt because it's going to be another 150, 180 years before the Babylonians come in and then utterly destroy Judah, Jerusalem, and the temple. Break down Jerusalem's walls and just utterly destroy the temple that was built by Solomon. So it's going to take time. It's going to be quite a while, but he's warning those in Judah. Now again, as we remember and look back on who is the king at the time, when Micah first starts prophesying, it's Joash, and he's a good king. But there's many in Judah who are absolutely not treating their own brothers and sisters the way they should be. And chapter 2 is going to deal with a lot of this, a lot of how they are just treating each other horribly and how they live to just benefit themselves and not each other. So Micah is going to live to see these Judean cities taken away by Assyria. He's going to see a lot of that destruction, and he's going to see the utter destruction of the northern 10 tribes, and he is warning them that this is coming. But that warning fell on deaf ears in the northern 10 tribes, because as we can see, their kings were evil all the way through. They didn't have a good king at all. And at the end, the kings that were put in power were put in power by powers outside of Israel. They were token kings, and they came to nothing and were utterly wiped out and destroyed. So we're going to see the sins of Israel and Judah highlighted in chapter 2. So let's look at the oppression, greed, and exploitation of the vulnerable we read about in Micah chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. If somebody wants to read that.
Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is the power of their hand. They covet fields, and then they seize them, and houses, and they take them away. They rob a man and his house, a man and his inheritance.
All right. So we see that he's accusing these people of laying in bed at night, scheming for how they're going to do these sinful things, making plans that they carry out as soon as daylight comes. They covet the fields of others, and so they take them. They cheat men out of their homes and their property. They are doing everything they can to better themselves, and they do that at the cost of their fellow brothers and sisters. So the Lord predicts that the sinners will mock the prophet and tell him not to prophesy. Let's look at that. Let's read chapter 2, verses 3 through 6.
Got it. Therefore, thus say the Lord, behold, I am planning against this family a calamity from which you cannot remove your necks, and you will not walk haughtily, for it will be an evil time. On that day, they will take up against you a taunt and utter a bitter lamentation and say, we are completely destroyed. He exchanges the portion of my people, how he removes it from me. To the apostate, he apportions our fields. Therefore, you will have no one stretching a measuring line for you by lot in the assembly of the Lord. Do not speak out, so they speak out. But if they do not speak out concerning these things, reproaches will not be turned back.
All right. So he says in verse 2, the Lord says to them, I am planning to send trouble on you. The Lord is telling them that this is coming. He says, you won't be able to save yourselves from it. You will not live so proudly anymore. It's going to be a time of trouble. The Lord is sending this upon these people. In verse 4, he says, at that time, people will make fun of you. They will tease you by singing a song of sadness. They will pretend to hear you say, we are totally destroyed. Our enemies have divided up our land. The Lord has taken it away from us. He has given our fields to those who turned against us. They're mocking him. They're mocking those who are bringing these warnings. Because remember, it's just, not just Micah. Isaiah is talking about this. And if we look back at the... we have Obed and Hosea also, who are warning about these things that are coming. There's four prophets in this time that are warning these people about what's about to happen. And they're just mocking the prophets. They're saying, oh no, it's going to come get us. But they're not changing their ways. He says, in verse 5, so you won't even have anyone left in the Lord's community who can divide up the land for you. Don't prophesy the people's prophets say. Don't prophesy about bad things. Nothing shameful is going to happen to us. Does that sound like they were just absolutely close-minded and ears shut to what these prophets were telling them? They had no interest in hearing that there was evil coming upon them. They had no interest in hearing the truth. And they would mock those who did try to tell the truth. Those prophets who came. What does Jesus tell us happened to many of the prophets who brought these tidings of bad news?
Weren't they killed?
They were killed. Right. Jesus tells these people, tells the Israelites in his time, that you killed the prophets. They were bringing you valuable information about what was about to happen to you. And you didn't want to hear it. You killed them. But the people of that time, in Jesus' time, wouldn't listen either. They didn't want to hear about the things that were happening to the prophets in the days of old. And they didn't want to hear what Jesus had to say as a prophet in that day, as the Messiah. They didn't want to hear it at all. Israel and Judah will ignore the prophet and they'll contradict him. If you look at verse 7, it says, people of Jacob, should others say the Lord isn't angry with us? He doesn't do things like that. The Lord replies, what I promise brings good things to those who lead honest lives. They're just absolutely ignoring the judgment that is being prophesied about what's going to happen to them. They don't think that the Lord is angry with them. Just like when Jesus accused the Pharisees of being in captivity, how did they respond?
We've never been a slave in slavery.
We've never been in captivity. We've never been slaves to anybody. Except for the 250 years that the northern 10 tribes were in captivity, and the 70 years that were prophesied that the southern 2 tribes were in captivity, and all the times they were in captivity during the times of the judges, where the judges would be raised up to wipe out those who had come into their land and had put tithes on them and made them pay these foreign kings. it's like they completely just ignore history. And that's what we see Israel and Judah both doing here. They ignore the prophet. They even contradict the prophet. They say, the Lord isn't angry with us. He doesn't do things like that. Oh, they're about to learn that the Lord does do things like that. They're going to learn the hard way that God is bringing judgment upon them. And for those northern 10 tribes, it's going to be harsh. It's going to be unrelenting. And many of those people aren't going to escape with their lives. And those that do are going to live lives of slavery. So it's not going to be pretty. And so the Lord, through Micah, further accuses his people of sin. Let's read verses 8 and 9 if somebody wants to take that up.
Recently, my people have arisen as an enemy. You stripped the robes off the garment from unsuspecting passers-by, from those returning from war. The women of my people, you evict each one from their pleasant house. From her children, you take my splendor forever.
All right. So, the Lord, Micah is accusing these people, as the Lord has told Micah to, of attacking their own people. They strip the robes off of those who are passing by them. I mean, they're just robbing each other. They thought that they were as safe as men returning from the battle they had won, but they're not. You had to look over your back each and every time, because you might walk by somebody you thought was your neighbor, and the next thing you know, you're on the ground and he's kicking you and taking your garments and your wares that you have with you. It says in verse 9, you drive women from among my people out of their homes. They're pleasantly living lives, taking care of their children, taking care of their husbands, taking care of their households, and you're driving them out of their homes. You're taking their property away from them. And he says, you take my blessing away from their children forever. Just how horrible these people are being to their brothers, sisters, and neighbors is just unreal. And Micah is bringing that to the forefront. They don't want to hear it. They're ignoring it. But Micah is making sure that the Lord's judgment is pronounced upon them. So the Lord pronounces this judgment in verses 10 and 11. If somebody wants to read that.
Arise and go ahead.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Arise and go, for this is no place of rest, because of the uncleanness that brings on destruction, a painful destruction. If a man walking after wind and falsehood had told lies and said, I will speak out to you concerning wine and liquor, he would be spokesman to this people.
and the New International Reader's Version puts a little spin on this, and it makes it a little bit easier to understand. I'm going to read verse 11 especially, but in verse 10 it says, get up, leave this land. This is the Lord telling these people, get up and leave this land. It's no longer your resting place. This promised land is not yours anymore. Get out of here. You're evicted. He says, you've made it unclean. You have completely destroyed it. They brought so much sin upon the land, and the way they are treating their brothers and sisters, they have completely destroyed the place where they are. In verse 11, it says, it reads, suppose a prophet goes around telling lies, and he prophesies that you will have plenty of wine and liquor. Then that kind of prophet would be just right for this nation. That's what the people want to hear. They're in this land flowing with milk and honey, and nothing's going to touch them. So if there's a prophet that's going around saying, you'll have wine and you'll have liquor, and you'll have plenty, your fields will continue to produce, then the Lord mocks them and says, that's the kind of prophet that you'll listen to. But the prophet that brings you the truth, the prophet that tells you what is actually going to happen to you, the prophet that's telling you about my judgment, that is coming on you, they will not listen to. They will not hear that prophet. They would rather hear the prophet that brings good tidings and good news. But after all this, after this judgment is proclaimed, Micah offers hope. The last two verses that we're going to look at tonight are verses 12 and 13 of chapter 2. Somebody wants to read those verses of hope.
I will surely assemble all of you, O Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like sheep of the fold, like a flock in the midst of their pasture. They shall make a loud noise because of so many people. The one who breaks open will come up before them. They will break out, pass through the gate, and go out by it. Their king will pass before them with the Lord at their head.
All right. So he offers them hope. He says, the Lord will not forget his people. The Lord will cause his people to be released from captivity. This isn't going to be never ending. It's not going to be something you can't endure. But the Lord is going to lead his people out of captivity, and the Lord's going to bless his people. So we see that the first two chapters here, we looked at what these people were doing, why this judgment is coming upon them, and that this judgment is truly coming upon them. He details the things that they're doing to one another. He shows them their sins. They don't want to hear it. They don't think that that's real. They don't think that God would ever go against them, even though they have seen this happen before time and time again in their history. Even before they were in the promised land, they were punished by God. They wandered for 40 years in the wilderness because of their sin. This is part of their history. They know it. But how easily we forget when the good times come and the bad times are behind us. Isn't that the truth? I think we see that in our day and age today. How easy it is for us to forget the bad and look forward to better times, always hoping that things are going to get better and better. But when all the people around you are living in sin, and you can see that happening, you can see the degradation of society, you know in your heart that something is coming. The Lord is patient, very patient. This didn't happen to Israel for hundreds of years. And it would be another 180 years before it happened to Judah. He is patient, and he listens to the cries of those who worship him. But the Lord can't overlook sin forever, and eventually judgment will come. That's all I have for tonight. So next week, if we follow the plan I have, I won't be teaching because I'll be at work, but Micah chapter 3, verse 1 through chapter 5, verse 15. And the theme here is judgment on the leaders and the promises of a coming king.